It's Sunday afternoon and time once again for Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis, and joining me in the studio today, Leanne Brown and L. Lamar Wilson. So welcome, guys, very much. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Jeff.
Oh,
yeah, great to have you here. So, Leanne, you've got a bunch of new stuff out. You've been busy as a bee, as usual. And you have a book out about Charlotte, our mutual hometown.
Right.
Gads, what a concept.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's Crowns of Charlotte. It's the second book in a series that I'm working on called NC Ode or North Carolina Ode or Encode. And it's published by Carolina Wren Press. And Lamar, who's here today, is also his book is from Carolina Wren. So we're doing a little mini reading tour together.
Well, that's great. That's great. Yeah. And Carolina Wren's one of North Carolina's great little presses.
Yeah. So, yeah, I could read some of that just to start off with.
That'd be a wonderful thing to do. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. We'll have some epigraphs. An autobiography that begins with one's birth begins too late. Married Lee Settle. And Kevin Young says, how you praise the thing you're kind of unsure of. And Cecil Taylor says, you've got to go back to your roots. You've got to go back to your roots. You've got to go back to your roots. He apparently said that for like 2 hours one time as a lecture. And the book starts out with a rewrite of A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, which I might have sung on the show before, but that's the epigraph. Have you heard it? You heard it.
Well, do it again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Almighty fortresses, open your doors. All swords to plowshares beaten. Why do our leaders lead us to war? All vengeful hatred eaten. For still our ancient foe within us each doth grow. Our need this hour is great. Disarm this cruel fate. Our words of love undo it. And I'm going to read a poem that I wrote actually in response to one of the blurbs that I got on the book, because Amy Catanzano, who's teaching at Wake Forest now, said that the work was dealing with the war culture, which it is a sub theme of the book about. There's an anti-war sentiment, not only because of my uncle who was killed in Vietnam, and it was a big mark on our family and relationship, but I've also I have a brother-in-law who was from Baghdad, so there's some intertwining with that. And I wrote this poem at the very end of the book, so I know I haven't read this on Wordplay because I just wrote it right from the book came out. But
there are a lot of things in here that
are Wordplay. Okay, it's called, and also my mother worked with refugee resettlement, so there's a allusion to the Hmong people that she worked with from Laos.
Many of whom settled in North Carolina.
Yeah, that's the big community in Morganton, and there's a big tribal leader up there, I've heard. So it's called Among Us. We are each other's mothers, sisters, brothers, fathers, once in camps or encamped behind wires. War is over, I thought forever, as I blew my cornet in suburban backyard, age 12, 1975, drew peace sign and dove, no way to recover, someone so close to those close to me, irrevocably gone in Vietnam. Unthinkable to release us from one war, only to tie us to another and another. I had faith in the world, world, world. Why are you still doing this killing? How can 7,000, or is it over 70,000, young Iraqi men be bulldozed alive under the burning sands of Iraq? The war comes home. Why are people afraid to open front doors, children to roam around? We have to start again. A poet said to me she was very tired, yet went on to rest, create again a place. to hold complex thought enmeshed in words, race, space, place, for party-colored people, new flavors raining down upon definition, the Hmong among us become us, tribal leaders ensconced, story quilts of escape halfway to the mountains, red cord and chicken foot around wrists, seeds sewn into clothes. Kalor wouldn't go in the house our church gave her family. A bird spirit trapped inside, battling windows with wings. No written language. Everything is alive. Sees the bondage around us daily. Next door slave time still cross town. All children are our children, growing up and living. All now our parents, our work, our word, our world.
Nice. Nice.
Oh, man. Okay. So, yeah, some heavy stuff going down nowadays. So.
Yeah.
Ballad of Winston-Salem. This is for about Deborah Sykes and Daryl Hunt. Daryl Hunt, who was exonerated for the murder and rape of Deborah Sykes. He was put in jail for 25 years, and he was not the person who did it. And he got out, and he's free, living in Winston-Salem. But after 25 years in jail. So this is about that story. Ballad of Winston-Salem, to the tune of Pretty Peggy-O. Sweet Deborah, she is dead, pretty baby-o. Sweet Deborah, she is dead, pretty daughter-o. Sweet Deborah, she is dead. We lay flowers at her head and across her final bed in the area. The tabloids, they are spread, Winston-Salem, oh. The tabloids, they are spread, Winston-Salem, oh. The tabloids, they are spread, they stain all our hands with red. No easy answer said, Winston-Salem, oh. The wrong man made to blame, oh, my listeners, oh. Their daggers in the rain, oh, my listeners, oh. The wrong one made to blame, how can we untie their names and stop waking in the dark 20 years ago? This act two lives entwine, everybody, oh. This act three lives entwine, everybody, oh. The one who's false accused and the one who now pays dues. We sing their story now in this ballad, oh. Oh, sing and speak the news, oh, my poets, oh. Sing and speak your news, oh, my poets, now. The power of art is great, but can it stop the hate? A woman still lies dead in the shadows, oh. Her mother's life a hell, oh, my baby, oh. Still spewing vitriol, oh, my baby, oh. Somewhere further south, tears keep flowing from her mouth. A hunted man now freed, may he live in peace. My babe, you're sleeping there, little daughter, oh. I see you, oh, so clear, little daughter, oh. The veil of tears will grow. How can I let you know? How can I keep you safe in any area? Every time you see a flower, pretty daughter, oh. Every time you see a flower, oh, my daughter, oh. Every time you see a flower, think on its healing power and cast it to the stream of the air, oh. And cast it to the stream of the air, oh. And one of the reasons I remember putting the flower in there was also we planted a cherry tree in Deborah Sykes' honor in Winston-Salem in a downtown park as a healing ritual. So that tree, yeah. I hope it's still alive. I'll give it a check on it. But yeah. That was a few years ago. And also, I was just thinking about, I was doing a lot with oils, essential oils, and you know, Bach flower remedies and that kind of thing. Like just, this, you know, not only just going into nature to finding solace and grounding, but also, you know, actual, you know, magic.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah.
Yeah, just like the plant friends we have to help us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Through the grounding.
Through their essences and otherwise. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely. Yeah.
Oh, what was I going to say? I don't know.
No telling.
No telling. You never know what I'm going to say. Here's one I had read about. That one of my favorite artists is Romare Bearden, who did, he's from Charlotte. He's
right.
born in Charlotte,
right.
and then he moved up to New York when he was pretty young, like about, I think, five or so.
Yeah.
But a lot of his memories, you know, were so strong that that's what he drew on for the rest of his life.
Know,
and a lot of them were Southern,
yeah.
of course.
Yeah.
And there's this beautiful mosaic in the downtown Charlotte Public Library that I really love, and it was commissioned for Romare Bearden, made it, and then he didn't see it realized, but he knew it was going to be happening. So it's a mosaic of a collage that he made especially for the Charlotte Library. So it's looking at that piece. It's called Before Dawn. Upon looking at Romare Bearden's mosaic of the same name at the Charlotte Mecklenburg Public Library, the door opens, backlit on a round purple rag rug mimosa mosaic. Before Dawn opens the mosaic door, backlit onto round rug rag in spiral, broom propped near another mother watching her daughter carry a bowl of green, round figs or sprouts. Her grandmother beckons open-palmed over patchwork tablecloth of orange ball and blue-green squares. At the same moment, my mind flickers to my mother taking care of my daughter. I am the woman shadowing the doorway, watching them play, watching thy, my mother. So it's also about, you know, it's looking at art and identifying with the people in the artwork. But it's also a tribute to my mom. She was like, you know, taking care of my daughter so I could have some time to go to the library. It's like, it's a lot of things there I see new every time I read that.
Yeah. Poems are like that.
Yeah. Actually, I found a typo among us. I take it. Young Iraqi men be bulldozed alive under the burning sands of Iraq. I didn't have Iraq twice in there. I know I took that out. We were talking about the trials of. It's always something, right?
It's like, always something.
Bernadette Mayer is a great proofreader, and she. She said, I know this, we proofread this book. She goes, I know I can find another mistake. And she did. And she's like, you know, one of the tricks is to read something backwards. You can find it that way.
I have a friend who's excellent like that too. It's a pretty amazing skill. I send her a perfect, what I think is a perfectly clean manuscript.
Yes.
And it's like all marked up. Yeah.
That's the life of the copy editor.
The life of the copy editor. I know. It's an amazing.
I know it well.
Yeah.
Is she in Asheville?
Yeah.
I want her number. Yes. You'll give it to me after the show.
I'll send you her email after the show. one I've particularly enjoyed in this is Acoustic Winter.
I skipped that.
And then there's the Museum of the Alphabet.
Oh, yes.
Those are two requests I'll put in right now.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Well, Acoustic Winter. Acoustic Winter. This is one of the ones that was written, on a solstice.
Yeah, I love the celebration of that.
And one of the secret devotees, of course, is Carol Novak. And. My friend Stacy Doris. Acoustic Winter. If the year ends a plural spiral, make it be so what a year is. If the winter begins again here in the longest, darkest place of the shortest, bluest day, we play the stillness deep into the night song beside all our sleeping family breath. Of the five friends I am holding, who will last the winter in their earthly spiral? In their spring trajectory, move to lovely summer, one more lovely summer, or further time to foil, days whirl into nights. I move to see my parents, the ones who have borne me out, have borne me up. I move to be with my sister and her local love, her ones. I move to join the circle, I am ready in my kith. Acoustic winter sings a summer, a way to stay awake. As the light brings back its basket, its halo, its wreath of lime and berries, Pine hurries to the wind again. Night is here at its most clear. Sound across the zones a weave. I sing this song again for winter. May Venus never sever her move across the sun to come upon the next transit, the next music, in time to finger, to find the new way to unwind skeins of sound in mind.
Nice.
I wrote that in the car on the way down from New York to trip south for the Christmas. I do a lot in the car. I do a lot of good thinking in the car.
It's true.
Something
very meditative about driving.
Yeah. It sort of frees
up. Also
because
your hands are tied. You have to pull over. I mean, to write something. Because my mind is freed up, but I don't have access to writing, so I have to I do pull over now. I used to try to write on the seat to this woman in Brooklyn, yelled at me.
That's right.
Carry a tape recorder.
Smartphones are also good for that. Voice memo. Yeah, indeed. That's lovely, though.
It's a nice one.
Yeah.
But winter solstice is really it's not really the beginning of winter. It's like the very, very earliest. I mean, it's the darkest. It's the middle of winter, and it's like when the first light, it's like really when the first light is starting to, the seed of light is there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So technically, it is the beginning of winter.
Right. Yeah. It is? Okay.
They say.
The very first day.
Right. Right.
Okay.
So that's all right.
I'm still trying to understand the whole, the year thing.
You got a while. You're young.
But what about this astrology stuff, Jeff? I mean, there's lots of astrology stuff in here, like the transits. So Mercury's finally going out of retrograde.
I know.
On
the
20th.
Yeah, right.
I wish it would be over.
I know. Yeah. That's next Saturday for those of you who are out there keeping score. We're looking forward to that. Yeah.
Well, here's one for some of the trials that North Carolina is going through.
Jeez.
There's many of them. This has just a little illusion. We did a reading in Park Road Books this past Wednesday, and I was telling them one of my great joys is to get people to sort of see poems that are sort of found poems in the world already.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And especially in the other book, in the Laurel's Cop, there's a lot of just signs. Angel food suspended, things like that that really exist. And my friend John Godfrey was like, Leanne, you're the only person that really sees those signs. So my goal is to get everybody to see these signs. But at the Park Road Shopping Center, there was a sign that said, Republicans to the right, Democrats to the left, and independents can go whichever way they want or something like that. Like they put it on a chain link fence. But this one has a little bit about Republicans and Democrats, but it's called Dive Bomb. I stop and save a box turtle from the middle of Republican Church Road, then hit a flash of bluebird with my windshield a few miles later. On the radio, John Stewart reports on the formation of the, quote, Congressional Softball League, in which teams are paired such that there's a good chance that each team could win at least once. So the Republicans form a splinter group saying, these rules punish the strong and reward the weak. This fine June morning, the deer my dad reports dead at the side of the road is tended to by vultures.
You've always had a lot of North Carolina in your books, and a lot of characters from Charlotte. Harry Golden.
Like Harry Golden.
Yeah,
I decided to try to go for it all the way, so try to get it out of my system.
No. That's
I'm trying
what
to make my
about.
Maximus, my Minnie Mouse.
Minimus. It's a large book.
It's so funny because the first one, I just feel like it's just one section of it. But somebody it got reviewed recently, and they said that I seemed to be trying to do for the South what Susan Howe was doing for the North. I was like, wow. But it's funny, because I always thought it was just sort of my reaction to Olson. I didn't really think, of course Susan Howe was a huge influence on me, but I was like, wow. I thought it was funny they would compare me to her, and I was wondering, if it's because she was a woman or something. I don't know, I had this weird take on that. It was a strange moment. But anyway, I'll read something else.
Read something else.
Okay. What time is it? Okay. Mom's Psalms. Oh, this is a seed text. I hope to do a whole book out of this one 3-line poem, and with my mother. That's one of my goals. Mm-hmm. It's called Mom's Psalms or How to Rewrite the Bible. If King David could do it, so can we. She likes to rewrite psalms for people's birthdays and like also she'll do like a celebration psalm and just replace, you know, some of the, it's like an Ulipo exercise. She'll replace some of the stuff with their own specificities of their life. And then sometimes she says they end up using it as an elegy at their funeral and stuff like that. But, you know, she does it for a lot of older friends. But I thought that'd be a great book to write, to compile some of hers and tell other people how to do that. You know?
Sure. It'd be sort of like redoing Shakespeare's sonnets as a popular exercise.
Yeah, I didn't bring those today. I've got a lot of those. How'd you know I was doing that? I knew that already. Okay, Museum of the Alphabet. You can't go home again, but you can come here, says the School of the Imagination, to this hometown ode radiating out across the Piedmont. You can't swim in the same lake twice, especially if it's man-made Lake Wiley or Norman, which contains Garfish Cove. Wiley was one possible boy's name for our daughter. I was to be Van, which rhymes with Anne. Why all this fascination with names? Every word is made of letters. It's something to hold on to, however slippery. Include everything in poetry, even though everything changes. The Alphabet Museum is an open form. Museum plus alphabet, two generative words not often seen side by side. The poem as Museum of the Alphabet with ever-changing displays according to who's walking through. If a language can be defined as a vocabulary plus a set of rules, then every poem can be a new language. To revisit childhood scenes is what happens through a new lens. We are not here to describe, say two young poets in conversation. I say we are not here only to describe, but to revisit description in such a sway as to not close it down. Hang the coattail of the idea on the goldenrod. I come not to bury, but to praise. That's another one I wrote toward the end, try to stitch the book together, like try to say what it was. You're picking out the meta ones.
Well, a great fan of the meta poem.
Yes. Yeah. It's a good thing.
Did you study with Susan Howe? Or
I've just been to a million readings of hers whenever I can, but no, I never formally studied with her.
Yeah.
I didn't make the pilgrimage to Buffalo like so many of her friends did, you did. I couldn't. But she was in New York the past year or two. She was living there a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
So she was doing a lot more down there.
Down there, yeah. Well, good. Is she still teaching in Buffalo?
No, she's
as retired now. Yeah.
But there's this one quote, I don't know if it exactly, but I'm going to use from my manuscript Sonics that has the rewritten Shakespeare sonnets, but it's like, I think she says like every mark on the paper, you know, every mark on the page, you know, is sonic, you know, is every mark has a sound. Uh-huh. That's so much as a basis of my work. It's like, that's why I feel like people don't even, I don't even believe people really read my books. I feel like they have to come to my reading, like to hear me. it's a different experience to hear it internally
experience.
In your head.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Which is how poetry is probably most often experienced, sadly.
But I don't know if I told you, I've had this fantasy of me and Lamar, going to small, like cafe and just like set up a little thing or like have a table and say, you have a little sign, say, come over and we'll read you a poem. Like just like an individual people, you know, do these like little guerrilla poetry readings, you know.
It'd be good.
In life, like bring it to the people. And
that might scare the people away. I don't know.
No. You're so
beautiful.
I don't
think so.
People want to come over and see.
And then
you
I read
are.
My poems.
Here's another Ramir Bearden one. I didn't put him on the dedication. Originally, all the Bearden ones were together in a suite, but it didn't. I just ended up putting them in the Museum of the Alphabet, and I alphabetized them. So that note in the back says this is one for him, but I didn't dedicate this one to him up front. But it says, this is actually looking at one of this beautiful collage I saw in New York. I was hunting around for the ACA gallery had a bunch in the back room, and this is one called Mecklenburg Evening. And I found out later he's got a lot of collages called Mecklenburg Evening, Mecklenburg Afternoon, Mecklenburg. He's got so many, but this is a beautiful one. It's Mecklenburg Evening catches the land and its trees in that saturated light before twilight when the sun is angled into its most vibratory. No figures in the space to suggest a temporary human condition. No space is inactive. The tangle of vines is suggested. This is no moss-covered south, yet deep enough to have many bees. The fall is bright and warm. The foothills rise from this Piedmont to the mountains to the west. It's unbearable in summer sometimes, but not as hot as Faulkner's dark porch. I realize what ties us all and animals too, which we are, is the land. The history of what we have done to each other on it complicates things, but everyone appreciates their own backyard gardens and secret caves carved out from inside the bushes.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Cool. I'd like to share one more.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to read one from...
In The Laurel's Caught.
In The Laurel's Caught. Yeah. I could do a whole other show on that. But
you could.
I wanted to read this at
it.
The Poetry Project, so I didn't get to... Because David Henderson was actually there at the reading, and I wanted to read this. I'm going to read this for him. David Henderson, this is for you.
There you are, David.
At first blue, awaked by the train through the snow, all the poets come to visit, one by one, from the shelves. David Henderson's hot Neo-California in the nation of Atslan works up a rhythm in the silence of the monitor lizard heater. Eric calls his, quote, girlfriend 500. Blood comes with new snow, wakes me up in time for first blue, now purple. On the porch in purple sheet flannel, the moon already halfway down from full blue on the eve of new year, new decade. The train's eye, the light calls to what? Empty and full local knowledge that extends a jumping point to clear the trees from the roads. They work like dogs. Sea glass in a bottle in the leaf room, under, down, generating, dreaming. Our mothers sleep, too, I hope, soundly in their beds. Owls still live behind the house, looking down from oaks. My daughter's first poem is written, drawn, quote, in Japanese, and translates as, sun, 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 come out to play. Sun, 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 come out. Her first poem consciously called that. There have been others recorded and noted. I record them not to take them, but to praise and keep them safe. They are hers. She has also made a hummingbird of wire and tissue paper perched on a branch, sipping from a huge red flower. With aid from others, we help to bend the wire and secure the branch in the wood at her direction. She forms the bird of color. I scribble in purple crayon. The sky lightens my return to bed. The snow is blue, black trees and deck, mist clouds. The earth is turning and painted. On her desk, the red part is actually lava pools, frost flowers and the snow on distant mountain and a million acres of sky. Pink, pink boots to the stratosphere, sunrise in outer space, love for everybody. We need it here on planet Earth.
Indeed we do. And sun, do come out to play.
Yes, sun, 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 come out.
Black is the color of my true love's hair. His face so soft and wondrous fair. The purest eyes and the strongest hands. I love the ground on where he stands. I love the ground on where he stands. True love's hair, of my true love's hair, of my true love's hair.
And you're listening to Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. Joining me in the studio today, L. Lamar Wilson and Leanne Brown. Thanks for coming in on such a mess of a day.
That's an understatement.
Yeah. on lots of levels.
It's really, you have a wonderful sonorous laugh, and I really wish I could enjoy it with you, but I just can't. But thank you for Nina Simone. That helps.
Good, 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 good. She's one of my great favorites, and also a local girl.
Yes, Tryon. I remember driving through here in the rain one night. I was trying to get to Kansas, and it was so much rain, I had to pull over. And on my way back, I was very, very sad because I didn't reach my destination. And I saw Tryon, and I opened the window, and I said, Nina, I yelled it out the window to make myself feel better.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what would you like me to start with? Is there one that you wanted me to start with, or can I just go?
You can just go. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at a poster on your wall of Public Enemy, and it says, "It takes a nation of millions to hold us back." And so I have a song that was in the book that I grew up singing that lets me know I'm not alone when I'm in a room or when terrible things happen. So, millions didn't make it, but I was one of the ones who did. Millions didn't make it, but I was one of the ones who did. I can't help it. I talk too much. I cannot tell a liar from a preacher, so I'll tell you what you want. I'm saved and sick of this world, safe in God's arms. God, give me this world in an honest man's arms. An ego is hard to stroke or easy if you know how to quiet it. Let a man feel his burn in your throat. I talk too much. I'm sorry I'm not sorry enough. I'll dance all over you, oh liar, oh preacher, oh daddy, oh, your tongue lashing is never hard or fast enough. When you lie still, stroking your chalice, the quiet makes me wretch. I am a lone dandelion in a field waiting. Come, blow me to bits. Still, you'll die this way, saved by the lies that burn like the ice water and alcohol mama sits me in to break the fevers our silence is brought, and I'll die thrashing, telling anybody all my secrets.
Nice, nice, yeah.
This is a poem I never read. I almost didn't include it in Sacrilegion, which can also be pronounced Sacrilegion.
Yeah.
I'm so thankful for that. it was a blessed accident. I didn't intend it at all until people started mispronouncing it, air quote. And then I thought, oh, God, yes.
How
beautiful words are that you can bring your own meaning to them.
Yeah.
So
that struck me, too, the first time I saw it.
Yeah. And it was a word just came to me as I wrote a poem that I hope to read. It's very long. But I don't normally read this poem. It's called Drive-By. It's one of the first poems I think I ever wrote in my MFA experience. I wasn't a MFA schooled writer. I was a kid who wrote underneath trees on the little land that we had, or the big land that we had back home. This is called Drive-By. I'm a trumpeter. Ba-da, da-da, da-da, da-da. Must be the dreadlocks. Know the red hot SUV. Know the deer in headlights glare after a rear end accident. the shock of the hit and run, the latest irony of my existence since my brachial plexus snapped and left me a palsied leper. Ba-da, ba-da, ba-do-da, da-da-da-da-da, ba-da. Must be that I am too helpful to Miss Gold Star Gumshoe. Must be hiding something behind my eagerness to hand over Florida registration and grinning license pick. Riding through this side of Milwaukee's worst at 2 a.m. I had a gig on 32nd and Burleigh, I muster, pointing to a beat-up trumpet case. But jazz cannot be that simple. We just need to take you in to check things out. I remain silence. Ba-da, ba-da, ba-do-da, da-da-da-dee-da, ba-da. Wailing inside on the ride to the precinct where turn, flash, turn, flash, turn, flash welcomes me. Steeled into submission, I sleep. 4 hours pass. I awake railing, why am I still here? Why am I still here? Why? Reluctantly, I am released. Ba-da, ba-da, ba-do-da, da-da, dee-da, da-da. Now I seethe every drive-by. Your public service announcement, the roar of your sirens, the red, white, and blue flashing threatens my sable soul today on this mountain. I want to die, no, kill a little more each time you hover, searching for the next one of us to put away. Ba-da, ba-da, ba-do-da. I never read that poem because I was raised to be a peace-loving child, and at 22 years old I was reminded that I wasn't safe.
Yeah.
That even when I was the victim of an accident, I must have been doing something wrong.
Yeah.
It must have been my fault. And I'm 2,000, well, I was in Milwaukee, so I was about 1,000 and 1,500 miles away from any family I had.
Right.
And when I got to the station, she allowed me to call my pastor and lied to him on the phone and told him that she was going to let me go because they took my fingerprint and could find nothing. I told them I worked at the newspaper and that wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
So I sat in a jail cell for 4 hours for no reason at all.
Yeah.
Except for I didn't look like the right person.
Right.
And I didn't want that poem to be a part of this book because I wanted this book to be about healing and hope. And I hope that when people, if people read it, get to the end, they see that. But that changed me. I think that's when I became a man, mm-hmm. honestly, because yeah. I had been allowed, even in a place as racially segregated and institutionally racist as I grew up, because of my intelligence and the desire for a semblance of integration, I was the one let mm-hmm. into these classrooms. So I somehow was marked as different. And my grandmother didn't tell me about some of the horrible things that happened, which also I talk about in here, until I asked her when I would go to the library and discover them. So anyway, I'll be quiet and read poems because we don't have...
Well, where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little town called Mariana, Florida. I grew up on the land on which my ancestors had actually been both master and slave.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a forbidden relationship that I'll never know, we'll never know whether it was loving or forced.
Right.
I would surmise that there was no option for her other than to submit.
Right.
But she had two children.
Yeah.
And when freedom came, those two children were freed and they were given, maybe out of love,
yeah.
some land. And then their children bought a little more, mm-hmm. and their children bought a little more, and my grandmother bought a little more, and her husband bought a little more, until they created this space of safety for us. But of course, I would eventually learn that mm-hmm. once I left that safe space, mm-hmm. I was not safe. Yeah. And unfortunately, we found out that that still is the case.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Yeah.
So, did you do an MFA program? Where did you?
I did. Yeah. I met Nikki Giovanni through her poems first, and then she was coming to Atlanta, and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution was not going to write about it, and I thought, how God could that possibly be possible in Atlanta, Georgia?
Yeah, yeah. You'd think.
Where her readership would be quite interested in her coming,
right?
And so the book editor, bless her heart, if she's listening. Said, if you want her to be written about, you must write it. So I did. And at the end of that interview, I said, I'm applying to to MFA programs locally because I just bought a house. And she said, locally? You need to come to Virginia. And I sent poems, and that's where I got the best funding. And so I went to Virginia Tech. I was admitted on April 16th, the day, the exact day of the tragedy that occurred there. Yeah. So I had to make a decision, and thank God I chose, as I hope we'll choose today, to believe in the possibility of love and hope and believing in whatever you have inside of you to make something out of the time that we have and to not live in fear.
Yeah.
Because if I had lived in fear and stayed at Atlanta, none of this would have happened.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. So who were some writers other than Nikki Giovanni whose work?
Oh, gosh, that's the worst question. I read so much. I mean, it's the best question and the worst question, right? Because we are readers. I was just telling Leanne how much I love Robert Bly's book that we saw. I love Yusuf Kumanyika. Magic City was an important early book as I was studying in that MFA program that I could latch on to.
Right.
Someone who understood this strange rage that you learn to manage, that you learn to deal with. And though he was writing about a different time, I understood it, you know, 30 years later.
Right.
But I also read Bob Hickok, who I studied with there. Mm-hmm. I also read Erica Meitner, who I worked with very, very closely.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I read County Cullen and Langston Hughes and Helene Johnson, who I'm working on in my dissertation in my program at UNC Chapel Hill. And, you know, I mean,
Lucille
I read
Clifton,
Rimbaud, Clifton is my deepest probably inspiration as far as trying to not be the one who talks too much, you know, which is my inclination, you know, to actually read. So I really would like to read poems because we are going to run out of time.
Yeah,
and one of the poems is really, really long.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I better read that poem because it is so long.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
It's called Resurrection Sunday, and so it's Sunday. This is actually about my hometown. A man holds his penis in his mouth, sprawled on a cheap sofa like the one that holds my bare backside. He stares blankly through the lens at the director for his cues, through me reaching for his gaze. I'm 20-something and home alone. I'm so there. I'm so not there or here alone. See the boy in overalls, cross-legged and wedged in the corner between two walls of books. He stares as Claude Neal's limp tongue holds his own limpness on the fading page of one dusty tome. Claude's sockets fixed on some constellation the boy wishes he could decipher. Claude's body, chiseled and mangled, hangs in an oak by a rope. There is nothing in this body we can desire and we want. We want a body not mangled like ours we can love without shame. The boy feels so small in his body, its scars that beckon stares and gasps. I am he, doubled in size and solemnity. I churn. I am an ocean of want. This video's hustler must do. His left pec brandishes a lion's paw and skull and bones. A broken heart heaves outside his right. With each kiss, our heads swell. He'll make $250 for this trick, $150 more than he'd earn trading others in parked cars on a street corner where no trees will grow, all these miles from us. This director promises he's stardust, has the blow to get him to the edge and may actually finish him. He tells me what to do next, moans, big, black, cock. I obey. I swell more still and remember I should be studying what Nietzsche says God isn't. I am at a black university. God always enters the classroom here, and my professor, a newly converted agnostic, will prove her theories, but this video's lessons will pay off sooner and take me and this boy closer than when he stared at Claude hanging in the anatomy of a lynching on that long ride home from the library, squinting but unable to see Claude's pupils, see if peace eclipsed terror before he died. Child, they came from everywhere, and all you could do was pray you weren't the nigger they picked for the picnic on the courthouse lawn, our grandmother says. In the picture, Claude is alone, but as she speaks, kids blur into the sepia background, ape the grins on their parents' faces, await their turn to prod his charred flesh. The boy asks if Claude was a good student like him, if she was the one who would not give the NAACP her name when 50-cent postcards, news of Claude's fingers and toes for sale reached Sands. I told that boy to leave that white gal alone. The only words breaking the silences of the rest of that ride, the only words her brother says at home. I told that boy to leave that white gal alone, their script a shroud over faces, suddenly childlike, each crease around their eyes, a dog-eared page the boy can never read. The boy wants to ask where the family of Lola Claude's slain lover lives, where his pickled prick must collect dust on some shelf. He wants to say, I want to study it. He wants to see how he'd hang loose to rove in a bottle, but he is a boy. He does not know how to speak the unspeakable yet. I heave. It is almost dawn now. The courthouse towers there in the center of that town, and that oak mostly limbless looms. Still, soon its flaccid branches will shade more brown boys, guilty or not, waiting to learn what their next move will be. It's hard to get anywhere without passing it, passing them, bowed, not meeting our gaze. The hustler moans. I gasp. I cannot take this boy, this fallen porn star, or his unseen master's plan where I'm bound. I turn off the TV. I am not afraid to raise this dead flesh for all and no one to see alone. Like that other hanged man, the boy followed so slavishly to ask him what no man, not even daddy, can show me. Jesus, if a man is black and his manhood is forced into his own mouth by another man who's as afraid of the power he holds but is pale enough to hold a camera, the gun, or the noose, how much of a man isn't he? Like you, O Lord, I rise with all power in my hand, but I do not want to cross this tempest alone. I am not that boy anymore. I am not afraid to say, I am a man searching for a man whose flesh will rise only for me, without force, without fear. Come, lie with me, and be redeemed. See my yoke, this flesh broken for you. Find here a different kind of holy, a sacrilegion, a sacrilegion. a sacrament for our sanctifying souls, dark and darker still.
Yeah, that's a terrifically moving poem. I knew when I read it that it had a presence and intensity that wasn't derived from any abstract source, but didn't realize how personal it was. Some of your other work has a more possible relationship to identity, a persona that is like, has a directness that is just really impressive. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a really interesting relationship to the I.
Yeah.
Because I think initially, as is true with many writers, you are writing from a very personal place.
Right.
Specter of this book is the HIV virus. Mm-hmm. And living in Atlanta, I lost many, many friends to it during the time that I was there and have since lost more. And then I had my own intimate relationship with it that I had to deal with that I'd always been exposed to when I lost my cousin as a very, very young child. Mm-hmm. And it began to creep closer and closer to me in my life and my family.
Mm-hmm.
In my own personal walk with myself. So that poem, I think, is definitely probably one of the most personal, closest to me poems in the book.
Yeah.
And many of the others, I know the feeling, the actual events may not be my own,
right.
But there are things that I was told by loved ones, by people who cannot speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to see that as a burden. As I was coming in today, realizing what we're all trying to grapple with, I no longer see it as a burden because I'm one of the ones that made it. Millions didn't make it into this room, never got a microphone, never had a chance to tell their story.
Right.
But I'm one who can speak for what I know of their truth and my own. And that's the gift of language, and that's the gift of this opportunity. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, share some more.
Okay. This is, I want to read something that if I ever get to reprint this book, is going to be the epigraph for this poem.
Oh, yeah?
It doesn't have an epigraph. A friend of mine made this a part of his Facebook post today, Ricky Laurentis, if you're listening, thank you. One of the writers that really helped me come into my own voice, who is not a poet, is James Baldwin, and this is probably one of my favorite quotes of his. There are so many ways of being despicable. It quite makes one's head spin. But the way to be really despicable is to be contemptuous of other people's pain. This is called Substantia Nigra. And when I came across the word, I thought, what? Oh my God, black substance, and to realize that it's the part of the brain that controls the emotions.
Really?
So, and Florida has really been, to say that you're from Florida is a really hard thing to do right now, and has been for quite some time. This is one of probably the last poems that I've written that made it into this book, Substantia Nigra. I pay a man to touch me now. In halogen he comes to give what no other has. He bows at my bidding. He knows where the burning leads. Back to that thatch box, Florida, one Saturday morn, not unlike the one that breached me into song, to prayer without surcease, soundtracked by that substantia nigra, that alluvial wealth whose terror deepens with time welled and a phallic home of too many branches of water and not enough swamps, home of broken Spanish moss, broken ballot boxes submerged in swamps and locked in church halls, licensed to shoot anything you fear or hate or fathom you owned if you're light enough. It's the law of this no man's land, licked dry by an unhinged ex-lover. Some call him son. I call him enemy now. Now I like it dark. I ran across the border to Clay, said, here, take and eat. Damned God, D-A-M-M, damned God, for a bald, shiny head. Repent, repeat. Said, he'll do till you come home. Said, he hawks black art. I won't be a hard sell. Just need a devotional om for my objectification. He'll sit through my musings, then surprise me with his intellect, punctuating my sentences with his lisp. He'll savor my run-on monologues. His genteel tongue will glide over my fears. I'll swallow his sincerity. I'll pass it on. He touched me and made me new. That Saturday morn I could not wait for you. I pay this soothsayer now to quiet my Cerberus, anoint my fearsome heads with oil. I moan to silence his snarls, hum him to sleep. Ah, this grayscale world, intractable, Tartarus for perpetuity. Oh, Florida, oh, Panhandle, you penal colony, you haven of anonymous alms and arms. Welcomed in pitch, home of the men who made me wish for the moon that made me, and the ones who made me wish I had one. Had the heft to wear the weight of this needling head, this water breaking, this grazing with the ones who gaze east daily for the first. The man who will never be the only one, whose pining primes our quest. I pay my medicine man, that doubting Thomas, that one with archangel name and face, to limn what keeps us alive and well, but not yet spilling. Not black or white or blue enough. These wise men say, I must tell you here again and always, I'm sick, I'm saved by their hands. Otherwise, other men will lock me in a steel box. A man, a white one, did once. 'Twas dark in there. I escaped doing what he forbade. Screamed, I am a man, I am a man, I am. I refuse his bitter pills. Still, oh, Dr. Jesus, part this endless sea of doctors, of men's sin-sick vision of these scars. Oh, mirror of my mind, here, now, and forevermore, I am not pocked. These marks, not beast stings. These broken bones, our broken bones do not portend or pretend. Black men, not mannish among black men, know how to be solvent. Sister, mama, Chula, Rahab, saint, wring the taint out. Where to tuck the bleach, how to cover blotches, slice edges, cinch waist in translucent bags. I left mine on mama and daddy's front porch. The dust mites won't touch it. The mite bees can't. Ah, I've lied. I never left you, Mariana. I am that boy, that man in this mirror, more than enough to touch what no man can. I am that woe man, too. I ring an other, in halogen he comes. We sing Negro spirituals. It's a black woe man thing. I told Jesus, be all right if you change my name. I told Jesus, be all right if you change my name. Too many deaths, too many infinitesimal to many, though I'll never stop counting. Tonight, I take this ringed man. He leaves me wanting you, wanting me. Who knows the way to Canaan? Got my ticket in my hand. I ain't got time to die.
All right. Thanks very much. You guys have got a reading tomorrow night at the Altamont in downtown Asheville.
Yes.
18 Church Street for those who are in town. So, yeah, not to miss.